Hello, I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at all nurses or health professionals interested in a research career. This podcast that will run fortnightly will feature nurse researchers from all levels, so PhD candidates, PhD students, postdocs and professors, and occasionally we'll throw in the odd bonus episode. We hope you enjoy it and find it really valuable. Do listen to the end where Eleanor and I do summarise the interviews, and if you get the chance, do click follow where you listen to your podcasts and you'll never miss an episode, and do give us a rating. Welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. I'm delighted to say this week I'm joined by Professor Liz Halcombe from the University of Wollongong in Australia. So welcome to the podcast, Liz.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
And I think I have to confess that I was there with you just about a month ago, and actually disappointed to be back on UK soil, having visited such a beautiful campus and a lovely part of the world.
You wouldn't be disappointed this week because it's freezing cold here, so you came at the right time of year in the sunshine.
Right, I'll try and take that as a positive. And as it's a bright sunny morning here in the UK, I suppose I really do have to take that as a positive. So this podcast, for those that have been listening before, really is about discovering what's behind the author, what's behind the paper, and getting to know really research or nurse research academics from a little bit of a personal perspective, because I think we read the papers and we cite people and we see people at conferences, but often we don't know who's behind it and the story to get them to where they are today. So, Liz, I'm going to start by asking you a little bit about nursing, really, and how you became a nurse in the first instance.
Well, that's a really interesting question, Andrew, because I actually come from a family of nurses, and I'm the youngest of three girls in my family, and all of us are nurses. So I'm the only black sheep, though. I'm the only one who went to university to do a nursing education. My other two older sisters were hospital-trained nurses.
And that's that. So I suppose in the UK we have the equivalent of when I was doing my nurse training, some people said they'd had the traditional training, which I think was in the older schools of nursing, and then I was probably one of the first people to do it through university. So did you sense that on the sort of in the working environment as well, that there was the people that were trained a certain way and there was you, the new recruits?
Definitely. When we first came out, there's certainly quite a few of the older nurses who didn't sort of think that we were fully trained or fully prepared to be a nurse, and that they had felt they had much better training through the hospital system. But I guess it's just different opportunities, different ways of learning and different skills that you've picked up along the way.
Yeah, it's in the UK we used to, because I was one of the early Project 2000 nurses, we were called Nurses for the Millennium, I think we were, and it used to be, oh, you're a Project 2000 nurse, are you, as if that was the label that you required.
Yeah, I don't think it was that dissimilar out here. It was just the whole university versus hospital trained was quite a figment of the situation when I sort of was first out in that clinical setting.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that it's probably happened here in the UK with the transition to the bachelor's degree as well. When we first had the Bachelor of Nursing or the Bachelor of Science, I think we had the degree trained and the diploma trained. So I think it will always go on, won't it? And to some extent, we're probably going to be having, well, we do have now, we have these people that trained at a master's level.
Definitely. And I guess in Australia, it's quite eclectic because we've also got so many overseas trained nurses who come with a variety of different backgrounds and expertise. So I think it's quite an eclectic workforce, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, and probably stronger for it. So with you, I suppose, the question is, the nursing career, the sort of nursing heritage, you know, your sisters were probably in the similar role to you, and you're saying you're the first person to do this in an academic way. What pushed that sort of transition into further academia and developing a research career?
Well, I guess when I finished my degree, I was lucky enough to work with some really good academics in my undergraduate career, and they sort of identified that I had a bit of a talent for research and a bit of an interest in that space. So I went on to do a Bachelor of Nursing Honours straight after my Bachelor of Nursing degree. And I guess I did that because I wasn't quite ready to go out and be a clinical nurse and leave the comfort, I guess, of the academic institution. So I did a Bachelor of Nursing Honours, and that gave me a real insight into what research could be and what kinds of things research look like in nursing. And from there, I had was lucky enough to have an opportunity to undertake a few secondments at the local health service that I did my new graduate program in, where I worked on a number of different evidence-based practice type projects. And I guess that really showed me that nursing academia and nursing research was something quite interesting and something that I was quite drawn to. So from there, I decided that I really wanted to do a PhD, which is where I moved into that sort of PhD program.
And how did that PhD come about? What was the topic and how did you decide the topic of the PhD?
Well, again, that's another interesting story to tell. So my original PhD was about a completely different topic to what I ended up doing for my PhD. So I started out doing a topic that was very focused on the clinical area in which I was working at the time. Unfortunately, I worked in a clinical setting that was largely driven by doctors. And unfortunately, the medical director in that unit that I worked in didn't see the value of nurses having PhDs and was quite disgruntled that a nurse in his department would want to do a PhD. So that didn't end well. And I suddenly realised fairly quickly that I wasn't going to be able to do the PhD that I'd hoped of in that particular area. And it just so happened that we had a new academic who'd been appointed to the university, and she worked in cardiovascular disease. And she was really looking for PhD students and opportunities to mentor young researchers. So I was a PhD student looking for a new topic fairly quickly because I was already 18 months into a PhD. And here was an academic looking for bright, enthusiastic PhD students to take under their wing. So that was kind of a bit of a match made in heaven. And I think I was very lucky to fall on my feet doing that project in primary healthcare, which has really set up my career moving forward.
And did it feel like a steep learning curve for you? Was it a huge, you know, ask? Because I think there's a fear, isn't there, that PhD, when nurses see this as something for other people rather than themselves generally, and perhaps traditionally those were the views of the sort of medical fraternity based on what you've just said. But did it feel like a steep learning curve for you to push on with a PhD?
It did, and I guess one of the things that probably drove me into finally making the step to do the PhD was another colleague of mine who was working in the same clinical setting. She decided to do her PhD, and I think the fact that she could do it, so if she could do it, why couldn't I do it, sort of was really, I guess, something that cemented that decision and gave me that sort of level of encouragement and confidence that if someone that I knew, who I worked with and had quite a lot of respect for, was able to do a PhD, then maybe I could do it too.
Yeah, and I think now, because there are so many people that have gone before when we're pushing into academia, we've got role models. Did you feel like you had any role models in nursing, or did you have to trailblaze yourself? Because your colleague was pretty much on the same level as you at that time. Did you feel like a trailblazer in this setting?
Yeah, I guess you did to some extent, because I look around now at the PhD students that I supervise today, and they know a lot of other PhD students. There's a lot of other PhD students in nursing in clinical settings. But when I enrolled in the PhD, apart from my colleague that worked in the same department as me, I didn't really know any other nurses who had PhDs. There was a couple in the School of Nursing where I'd come from my undergraduate training, but it certainly wasn't as prolific as it is today, and certainly not all of the academic staff had PhDs.
Yeah, and I think personally I valued peer support at the time that I did my PhD, because there wasn't really I don't think I was working anywhere where other nurses were doing a PhD, but I was working in a medical school with allied health professionals and methodologists, and even though they weren't nurses, I still valued the fact that we were doing PhDs at the same time and could bounce off one another. Did it feel like there was just the two of you?
Yeah, I think I did my PhD at the University of Western Sydney, and there was certainly a group of us who went through and did our PhDs at the same time. And it's actually quite funny because a number of them I still work with today, or at least keep in touch with, because we all kind of did support each other and worked together and shared ideas and shared stories and highs and lows across the time. And I think that was probably a really important experience, and certainly I would encourage others to really make those links with other PhD students.
Yeah, and it might sound a silly question, but has this enhanced your career? Do you think, had you have not taken the PhD at that time, do you think you'd have still found your way back in academia one way or another? Were you destined for that anyway?
possibly destined anyway, but I think certainly doing the PhD when I did, because it was still reasonably early in my career. I'd done a Bachelor of Nursing Honours and I'd spent 10 years in the clinical setting, but it still was reasonably early in my career. And I think that's given me an opportunity to, I guess, develop a longer-term career in academia. I think obviously if you do your PhD later on, the ability to then build that into your career is somewhat diminished by the fact that your career is not as long as it would be if you were younger. Yeah. So certainly it has helped me to shape what I've done in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I might have the go-ahead on this next question, because I'm sitting next to a document that says National Practice Standards for Nurses in General Practice, and it's the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation standards. If I'm asking you what your career highlights were, I suspect this is high up there.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's probably a couple of career highlights. I think certainly my work in primary healthcare has been really important to me, and I think it's been great to showcase what it is that nurses can really do in the primary healthcare space. And certainly as I've gone through my career and looked around, there hasn't been a lot of other nurses working in that space. There's certainly people emerging in the last sort of 5-10 years that have been working in that space, but I guess fairly early on there wasn't a lot of research being done. So I am quite proud of the work that we've done around that to showcase the role of nurses and the scope of practice in primary care. And I guess those practice standards were really an opportunity to communicate what it is that nurses can actually do in the primary care setting. In Australia in particular, nurses don't get to work to their full scope of practice for a number of reasons, such as funding and medical staff not being supportive. So being able to produce that document was a really important step, I guess, in showcasing the changing role of nurses in primary care.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did it come about that you were involved in, I suspect, leading this to some extent?
Yeah, so I guess I was lucky enough that the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation are the owners or the sponsors of those competency standards, and there was a previous edition done in the early 90s, and the academics who'd done that piece of work were no longer working in academia. And I guess the Nursing and Midwifery Federation recognised that I'd been doing work in that space, so invited me to lead the project for them.
Wow. And from your perspective, do you think that gave you a higher profile, the fact that you were on these? Because I often think we do have researchers on these, but there's real value, isn't there, in sort of co-authorship and co-investigator roles for people that perhaps haven't got a PhD on things like this, because they bring their clinical expertise.
Definitely, and it's actually really interesting you say that, because the person who worked as the project officer on that project with me, Christine Ashley, actually later on became a PhD student of mine and completed her PhD about 4 or 5 years after we did those standards, and she probably wouldn't have done that PhD had she not have been involved in that particular project. So that was a really good opportunity for her to have that opportunity to work with someone and see that a PhD was within her grasp.
Yeah, and for good or for bad, when you create standards at this level, have you got them for life? Are they coming back to you, Liz, to say when's the update, and are we looking to update the standards?
Yeah, I guess that's something we've been talking about fairly recently, because they're about due to be updated. It's been about 10 years since they were originally done, and clearly things have moved on a lot, and particularly in primary care in Australia there's lots of policy changes and things happening at the moment, so it's certainly something we're looking at doing very soon.
Marvellous. And from an outsider sort of listening in, I suppose we talk about PhDs a lot, and people probably don't then realise what provides that sort of platform or stepping stone to push to professor. And this is our professor series of and this is one of the professor episodes of this podcast. So what really propelled you on to the chair, the professorship? How did that come about?
So I guess it was a bit of a reluctant step to take the professor's role at the University of Wollongong. It's my first professor's role I've had. And I guess it came about because the person who was the head of school at Wollongong at the time decided that Wollongong University was a fairly small regional university at the time, and she couldn't compete against the major Sydney universities in areas where they had expertise. So things like midwifery and mental health were areas that she couldn't compete with. But what she could compete with was by strengthening research in areas where we had experts or had important key topics, but they weren't sort of quite as prominent in the major institutions. So she identified areas such as evidence-based practice, primary care, aged care, and she recruited professors strategically to those positions to create a research team that would produce, I guess, novel nursing research that wasn't in competition with the other bigger universities, but could certainly hold its own in terms of impact and publications.
Yeah, yeah. And up there with one of the prouder moments?
Definitely. I must admit, though, the job was advertised twice before I finally applied. So it certainly did take a little while till I decided that it was actually what I wanted to do and where I was actually going to go.
And probably a difficult question to ask, but what I'm getting really now from, and I won't name anybody else because there'll be future episodes of this based around the people I'm talking about. But what I've noticed in nurses in this professor series is they didn't either feel they were ready for it or wanted it, or it wasn't an aspiration to be professor. And do you think that's nurses holding nurses back? Do you think that's us holding ourselves back a little bit?
I think it is. It was interesting. I was talking to another group the other day about nurses who received an award from an industry body here in Australia. And one of the observations that these people made about these nurses was they got up there and they received these major national awards, and they looked down at their feet and they sort of said, "Oh, but I'm just a nurse. I had a team behind me." And I think that it's really telling that nurses need to start to stand up and be proud of what it is they do and their abilities and their skills, and not crouch back in the corner and say, "I'm just a nurse."
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm getting the same sense when I speak to people, and even now some of the people with PhD, you know, talking about PhDs, they look at you as if to say, "Well, I couldn't do a PhD." And I think we're making the pathways clearer, and I think we're making the opportunities broader, but I still think we almost need to push a confidence and in what we do in nurse training, because there's no lack of pride, and we understand that, you know, of course you should be very proud of what you do, but a confidence and a sort of a sense of self-worth academically as a nurse, I think sometimes is lacking, and I don't know how we push that through nursing and midwifery.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's really important that nurses really think about the way they portray themselves and the way they carry themselves and the level of confidence they have, because I think sometimes we're our own worst enemies in terms of selling what it is that we do and what our contribution is to healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. And Liz, the key question that I always ask people particularly in this professor series is, if you could start your career again, would you do anything differently? Is there any sort of sliding door moments that you may have missed?
I think I've been incredibly lucky in my career. I've fallen into contact with the right people at the right time who've opened doors and created opportunities for me. A lot of the things I've done have been serendipitous rather than planned. And as much as I might like to think that I would do things differently by planning them better in the future, I think sometimes it's those serendipitous things that take you in a different direction that really change the way that your career unfolds. Certainly when I set out, I never thought I would be an expert in primary healthcare. As a new graduate, I was enthralled by intensive care and critical care and trauma nursing. So certainly it was an opportunity that came up that I grabbed with both hands and went forward with. So I think it's about looking at those opportunities and doing that.
But again, is that serendipity thought a bit playing down your own strengths and character and reputation perhaps? Because I think you had to be the right person to be in those right places.
That's very true. I think it's also about recognising when an opportunity is a good opportunity and when it's a shiny ball that you perhaps don't want to chase. So you're right in the sense that you've got to be in the right place at the right time and be the right person for the particular role. But I think it's about being open and looking at opportunities that present themselves and considering taking them.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the listener, I suppose the key question is, tell us a little bit about what you do now. So what's the role of Professor Liz Halcombe at the University of Wollongong? What does a researcher do at that level?
So I guess I wear a couple of hats in my current role. So one of them is I'm the head of postgraduate studies. So I look after all of the PhD and Masters of Philosophy students within our school. And that's no small job. We started off with 30 students when I took on that role in sort of 2019. And we're now sitting in 2023 with something like 62 students. So we've certainly increased our numbers dramatically. And they're quite a range of eclectic students, from senior clinical managers to international students to new graduates who've come through a Bachelor of Nursing Honours program. So supporting those students is a quite an interesting job, as well as supporting the supervisors that work with them. The other thing I do is I do teach in our master's program. I teach research methods, so that keeps me busy and reminds me what the university's all about. And I guess the third aspect of my role is really around my own research program and supporting early career researchers and PhD candidates who are working in that primary care space to develop their research alongside my research programs and funding.
Yeah, and the sense I'm getting when I'm talking to professors for this series is that there's a lot of leadership, isn't there, once you're at that level, and that's probably to be expected.
Definitely, and I guess there's leadership in a whole range of ways across, whether it's mentoring the higher degree students we have, whether it's working with our early career researchers, whether it's leading our own programs of research, or mentoring colleagues who work in parallel type research interests.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about nurses now that are considering moving into academia or want to develop an academic career or want to push forward with a PhD, what advice would you offer to nurses, wherever they're listening, because hopefully this is wider than the UK and Australia, but you know, across the world really, if we have listeners at that level, what advice can we give to nurses that want to push on in a research career?
I guess the first thing I would be saying to people is go and talk to people. I guess I was fairly naive when I started out with my PhD. I was lucky that I was working with some really good people who were really supportive and gave me some great opportunities. But probably one of the things I would encourage other people to do is go and talk to people who have shared experiences, who might be interested in the same kind of topic areas as you are, or be just in the midst of their own PhD, and find out who's good to work with, which institutions are going to be the most supportive, what kinds of things do you need to think about before enrolling in the PhD program, and what kind of supports can you need. So I encourage people to sort of have conversations with other PhD students, prospective supervisors, and other clinicians or academics to really get a feel for what the options are out there before they make decisions about where they go to study.
Yeah, absolutely. Liz, it's been fascinating to listen to where you've come from and where you are now, and really nice to have that international perspective on this as well. And I think perhaps so because there's so many similarities in the history that you told us about how you were viewed as wanting to do a PhD and the job pushing forward. So we're really grateful for your time. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Andrew, and I look forward to hearing more podcasts in the future.
And yes, we'll get you into podcasts and make sure that you can hear this in the future, Liz.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Liz. Welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, where you are joined by myself, Andrew Finney, and my summariser,
Eleanor Hovard. It's nice to be back.
Almost,
thanks,
almost,
Andrew.
Almost caught you out there. Almost caught you out. Not that it matters. I know you're there in the community now and that. But we've had a really completely different interview this week to some extent, but some similarities and challenges. And again, another real trailblazing professor of nursing in Professor Liz Halcombe from the University of Wollongong. What did you think of Liz's interview?
Yeah, so this is the second interview now that I've listened to, and Liz's story is different, obviously, to Gina's. But what's interesting, I think, is perhaps no matter where you are in the country, there are still some similar challenges to developing clinical academic careers. And I think Liz also highlighted the importance of role models, you know, and having somebody to aspire to and think, you know, I think she said, if they can do it, then I can do it. And also spoke about some of the issues around academia and clinical academia being driven by medicine as well, which traditionally has been the same here in this country. And also the importance of leadership as well, and talking to people. I think the more you talk to people that perhaps are developing clinical academic careers, regardless of where they are in that career journey, it really helps because you don't feel so alone. It can be kind of isolating, I think, sometimes, can't it? In this sort of aspect of work, if that's the career you're going down. And like she said, you know, sharing stories is really important, those highs, those lows. And also she mentioned something about, you know, kind of, I suppose, maybe a little bit similar to what Gina was talking about with, you know, having a family and juggling those priorities as well. But, you know, are you too young? Are you too old to do a PhD? When should you start? You know, and I know that that's crossed my mind as well. I'm older, embarking on this journey, but I think I would have found it more difficult doing it younger. But everybody's different, aren't they? But I think having hearing about lots of different experiences, I don't think there's a right and a wrong way, is there? It just depends on what works for you at the time. You know, she also spoke about serendipity as well. I've heard that before. And it's a funny thing, isn't it? Serendipity. Sometimes you do think, you know, you can fall into doors and opportunities, but also maybe you don't give yourself credit for thinking, well, actually, how did that serendipity come about?
I
You know,
did try
was
and
I
catch her on that one. I did try and
lucky?
follow her up on that one because she was saying fortunate too, and lucky enough. And there is that sense in nursing, isn't there, that we, I don't know, there's not an imposter syndrome that's naturally within nurses, but there is a sense of that we always play ourselves down a little bit. And I think in that serendipity, we often play ourselves down because we earn the right to be where we are, you know, we don't fall into it. And I think Lizzie's one of those. She's hugely respected by her colleagues. I'll fess up because I know when we last spoke a few weeks ago with the Gina Higginbottom interview, you knew Gina and worked with Gina through your PhD, and I'm working with Liz Helcombe a little bit now. I was fortunate enough to go to, I have to say it right because in England we say Wollongong, but actually they say Wollongong. So I was fortunate enough to go to the University of Wollongong, UOW, in April of this year, April, early May of this year, and to see the respect her colleagues have for her and to see the work that they're doing in Australian primary care, which is very different to UK primary care. But what I got was the similarities that they've got the same issues, the same problems, the same perhaps lack of, I think particularly with primary care nursing, that perhaps not, and again, not lack of respect, but people don't value the skill set that primary care nurses have. And I think through some of Lizzie's work and the fact that she developed to the national standards, she really enhanced the role of primary care. So I've been trying to work with her collaboratively now to develop some research grants that we can do cross countries. And, you know, would be delighted to have somebody of her expertise on my own grants now.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? And I mean, for her to be involved in developing those national standards is pretty amazing. But like you say, I think, you know, maybe as nurses, maybe it's just water off a duck's back that comes along, you know. But I think, you know, maybe we just don't shout so loudly about some of the achievements that we make. But yeah, I found it incredibly interesting listening to her perspectives. But also she highlighted, I think, as well, that it's important to take those opportunities, or to give those opportunities as well, to individual nurses, midwives, health visitors, to co-author perhaps on papers, because that could just ignite an interest, you know, in developing a clinical academic career. And it's not for everybody, but if you don't give people those opportunities, they won't know, will they?
No, and to be over there, I mean, beautiful university in a beautiful part of Australia, but they've got, you know, they've got a strong team in they've got a head of school who's a statistician, and they've got researchers across the field, so you know, in mental health as well. And again, lots of PhD students, and I think they're developing, you know, a research culture in a way that I suppose we feel like we're doing at Keele at the minute. It's, you know, we're trying to develop a research culture in a school that's predominantly educators and find it hard to get onto the research ladder. So it was nice to sort of see the synergies between myself working at Keele University and what they're doing at Wollongong, but they seem very forward thinking. They've got some great research underway, and I'm delighted to be collaborating with them and hoping that we can develop what we call a memorandum of understanding with University of Wollongong to take that forward.
It's fantastic, and it's a really good example as well as to how you can work as nurse researchers on a global level as well, you know, and the opportunities that you can get and make and create that, you know, that international impact. One other thing that did strike me was how she did point out as well that she also came across sort of a blockage almost when she was wanting to do her PhD, and somebody tried to you know, stop that really, but she found a way around.
Yeah,
and I suppose that's also, you know, another example of that tenacity of having a real grip on something and go, right, well, I'm not going to let these people get in my way if they, you know, if they're not going to be supportive. And look what she's done. And she said she never imagined herself to be in the position that she's in now, which is interesting, isn't it?
And I won't name drop any future interviews, but because there's a few that you haven't listened to yet that obviously I've recorded. And there's not a theme as such, but there's a couple of situations where people have saying they were told nurses don't do PhDs. I mean, this is a while back, but there was a sense that people didn't think nurses would do PhDs. So it's good that people have had those similar barriers, but I think they're old barriers. I don't think they're there anymore.
Yeah. I'm feeling like that's probably the case as well, but you know, let's hope that, you know, we're going to be changing that soon by sharing all of these inspiring stories.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks for your time again.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure.
I think that will probably the right time to stop us there. And, thanks for listening, and Eleanor, and those listening, we'll hopefully see you next time.